Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Hey, before we get this show started, let me quickly tell you about a program that we just launched called Outside the Box. When we first started Brute, we simply served people that wanted to train for and compete at the CrossFit regionals and games. Pretty quickly, we transitioned to also working with people that wanted to compete in the open, people that just wanted to look better naked, people that wanted to compete in weightlifting, as well as a host of other goals. About a year and a half, we started hearing more and more from members and former members that their priorities were shifting, that their goals were shifting. They wanted to focus more on their relationships, on their careers, on new hobbies, and they didn't have the same desire. They didn't have the time or the means to train for an hour or two or three or four like they did when they first signed up with us. So we created this program with them in mind. Outside the Box is a 30-minute a day program for 5 days a week, and it requires minimal equipment. There are three different tiers. The first tier requires only a set of dumbbells, and each higher level requires more and more equipment. So whatever you have, we've got something for you. At Brute, we really pride ourselves in bringing together experts in every area of the sport of fitness. And so when we were thinking about creating this program, we realized that we didn't have anyone that was an expert in general physical preparedness. So we had to go out and find that person. That's when we decided to team up with the founders of Warm Up and Workout, Pat and Taz Barber. Pat has been a CrossFit level one and level two instructor, as well as a Flowmaster for years. And I've seen the level of programming that he and his wife have created for their company, Warm Up and Workout. And I can say without reservation that these guys get it better than anyone on the planet. So we found our experts, we created our program, and it's ready to roll. If you're the type of person that really takes his or her fitness seriously, but you also want to have the time to focus on your careers, your relationships, your personal health, and you don't want to spend hours and hours in the gym anymore, then this program is for you. If you want variety in your programming, if you want to know that you're going to continue getting fitter without having to put in the same amount of time that you're used to as a high-level competitor, then this program is for you. If you're interested, you can find out more at outsidethebox.fit. This week, I've got Marcus Philly back on the show. Marcus is a four-time CrossFit Games athlete, as well as the owner of Revival Strength and the creator of Functional Bodybuilding. On our first episode together, we ended with him talking about his experience living in an ashram. And today, that's exactly where we picked back up. I wanted to dive more into his experience doing a three-day solo experiment while he was in the ashram, and then talk about the trajectory that really set him off on. We talk a lot about his story on this show, how he went on to go into medical school, why he left medical school, how he got into CrossFit and becoming an elite CrossFit athlete, and then how he went on to create the super popular functional bodybuilding. Marcus is a very purpose and mission-driven individual, someone that I always have admired and looked up to. And it was a real pleasure getting to know more about his roots and how he developed into the leader and person that he is today. So without further ado, I introduce Marcus Philly. Marcus, welcome back to the show, man.
Mike, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me. It seems like it's been quite a long time.
It has been. But like I was telling you before the show, it's been a pleasure to watch someone that I admire so much have the level of success that you've had over the past couple of years. I think during our first show, you were kind of just getting functional bodybuilding and the Awaken series off the ground. And over the past couple of years, I've just seen it explode. And I've gotten to see your mission statement and the conversation that you're having more and more and more. And it couldn't happen or couldn't be happening to a better person with a better mission, man. So it's been a real pleasure to watch happen.
Well, thanks for saying that. And it means a lot coming from you, somebody who I certainly look up to and have watched you have, you know, your own level of success in so many different areas. And I think something that you know is that there's levels to success that come with longevity. Like how do you do this over many years? You know, because I don't want to be just a flash in the pan of like, oh, there was that functional bodybuilding thing that was cool for a little bit. Because I truly believe, and I know you do as well, what our principles that we preach and we coach, they have a strong base in foundational strength conditioning principles and lifestyle principles that should last people a long time. So that's kind of the place I'm finding myself in these days is making that transition from, you know, being the hot new thing that people see to, oh yeah, this is something that can sustain me and be part of my life for years to come.
It's interesting that I think that one of the most important things for anyone that wants to sustain their level of success long-term is simply having the awareness that what they do now has an impact on what they're going to be doing long-term. Most people just try to maintain doing the same exact thing that they've always done rather than continuing to evolve. And so simply having the awareness and starting that conversation like you're doing implies that you're learning and evolving and growing and doing things that are going to continue to be valuable and impactful to people.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good way to sort of give perspective on it because it's plenty of people I see doing the opposite of what you just said, and they just get stuck in doing, and it's a challenge too because these business coaching this world like it requires and it demands a lot out of us time wise, and when it's hard to know exactly when to start getting help and having people come in and take responsibility off your plate so that you can get the perspective you need to see, okay, how do we need to evolve? How's our core message being received and how does it need to change in order to continue to be received? And it's definitely something that is taking up, you know, a good amount of my brain energy these days, man. Welcome for sure, but and it's also necessary.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting to hear your, like, even the way you talk about this business now versus our first show is starting to be different. You're talking about like the message and the conversation that you're having rather than just a type of programming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was so, you caught me at a time where I was so passionate about the details of what I was doing on a day-to-day basis within the design because I still hadn't, let's see, I think it was about this time, like over a year ago. So maybe around the open of last year.
Right.
And we were coming up on, you know, another Awaken training series, launch where we were going to get more people involved. And it was, I was still developing my concepts and my ideas, you know, very much.
Yep.
And then since then it's been a refinement of what those concepts and ideas are. And then recognizing, okay, what are people really listening to and hearing, and what gets across to the audience? Because, and perhaps you've seen this, there's a lot of people on social media certainly that have taken the idea of or the word and the language of functional bodybuilding and just used it in their own way, mm-hmm. right? So now functional bodybuilding perhaps is getting diluted a little bit. And it's like, well, what were people gravitating towards within Awaken Training Series and within some of our coaching systems? Was it functional bodybuilding? Well, now functional bodybuilding, you know, kind of like CrossFit has got different definitions out there. People are doing it different ways. So I got this guy over here doing functional bodybuilding, but it's a totally different type of program. And so what separates us and what makes us unique and what made people come back time and time again to finish out every single program that we offered and then ask us for more, you know, and then what can we learn from that to speak to the people that still haven't found us, because there's right. still a lot of people that haven't found us, and there's, and our target audience out there, really kind of two different groups. They still are thirsty for this stuff. They need it bad.
It's cool, man. It's a fun game to be playing.
Yeah. It's a game that I don't know. I didn't anticipate playing, you know, I mean, I kind of thought I was just going to be a coach and coaching individuals and running a gym. And, I'm thankful for the opportunity to get an audience as big as I've had, and to be talking about a philosophy, not just, hey, let me coach you 1-to-1.
Right.
And then taking that philosophy and turning it into usable content that coaches and athletes can benefit from.
I love it, brother. So our last show wrapped up with your very unique experience in an ashram when you were 21. You had gotten out of college, done very well. I think you made all A's and a B, and you got out thinking, and you were pre-med, about to apply to med school, I believe. And you got out thinking something like, what the hell was that all for? Like, why did I just spend all of this time and energy, into this one thing that I don't even know if I care about? And you went into an ashram in Colorado. And for those of you who are interested in hearing the backstory there, you can listen to our first episode. We'll put the link in the show notes for that. You mentioned something in that conversation that stuck out to me that you kind of glossed over. And it's that you did a 3-day solo while you were there, but you didn't really go into detail. So I'm wondering if you could talk about that experience and what that was like for you.
Wow. Taking it back. That was good. Yeah. Good homework on the, where our last conversation left off. That was kind of the picture of my life at the time was, what was all that hard work for? It was like, I'm working towards something, but I'm not exactly sure that I even know if I want to go down that route. So do some exploration of who I am when you strip down some of the labels of student, athlete, pre-med. And it kind of just, I mean, I was at a low point in terms of just my psychological state and emotional state. I was depressed after college, really throughout the last semester of my college. And so my mom kind of, she was in a spiritual community that I just sort of was like, okay, I want to just explore what this is like. And I actually, before I went to the ashram, I went to a couple of spiritual retreats with her, with the same group, you know, put on by like a spiritual, you know, guru master, but it Indian Hindu tradition, but essentially like just meditating a ton, you know, more than I'd ever done. I'd done a little bit before that, but never to this degree. And these retreats also had, you know, periods of silence, like evenings where you like, you know, we were in silence for the evening. So starting at 3 p.m., we'd meditate from 3 to 6, and then we'd go have dinner, and basically starting at 3, no talking until the next day. So that was my first exposure to sort of being with myself for a period of time and not being engaged with other people. And of course, you see people, but that alone was really difficult. It was so uncomfortable to be with myself, you know, getting out of my own thoughts and experiencing, you know, to get out of my own thoughts, the depressive thoughts, the what am I doing with my life? Like, I'm not happy with where I'm at. It was a lot easier if I could just deflect and talk to other people. Mm-hmm. And so those spiritual retreats were kind of extremely uncomfortable. What I found was, in having done like probably five over the course of the 2 years I took off between undergrad and graduate school, including the ashram stay, was, okay, I'm going into this thing. There's going to be a 1 to 3 day period of time that is going to be torturous. I am going to get worse and get angry, and I'm going to have all my buttons and my internal stuff just brought to the surface, and it's comfortable. And there's going to be a breaking point at which I will sort of let go and release and just surrender to something. And the other end of it is like total bliss, just like, oh my God, you know, like, like the total hippie, like I am just one with everybody, feeling just connected. And it's amazing. And I think that the ultimate test, like the ashram was kind of my last experience with the organization before I actually went to medical school. So it was a 2 week kind of, four weeks of kind of intensive on-site living there at the ashram, where I was doing daily work with the residents that were there. These people that meditate, you know, 5 hours a day, they do service work all day. And all that was happening, I was having I'd already thought I hit my low point and was going to come out the other end. And then, I think I was challenged by the resident kind of, Swami to, he was like, hey, I think you're ready to go and do intensive solo down at the lodge, or this like kind of offsite residence that they had. And it was like everything on all the discomfort and all the scary parts of being with my own thoughts, just on steroids. Like, right. And I didn't leave this room for 3 days, and I didn't have anybody to talk to, and I didn't have any electronics. And I read a little bit, but I tried to not just distract myself with reading. And my goodness, you know, it's, when you don't have things, when I didn't have things to distract me, it's amazing where my mind went, and then what I'd have to look at, you know, in the mirror when I was sitting there. Gosh, to think about doing that right now, where my life just literally jumps from one thing to the next, and I'm constantly engaged and rarely sitting with my own thoughts. It's such a world departure. Oh my gosh, universe, totally different universe now.
So what was it like for you when you got out? So it sounds like you go to med school. So it sounds like you got some amazing effects from this experience. So what was it like transitioning back into the real world as you're getting into med school?
Well, I think that was probably about 5 months, 6 months before I went to medical school. And the story goes, I literally got on a plane a day after that intensive 3 days and flew to San Diego for an interview at UC San Diego Medical Center. So just a total transport into like, okay, you're in real life. Now you have to go and put on a suit and
perform. And
take off your white robes and go and get your suit on and make them think that you're, you know, going to be the next best doctor that's going to come out of their program. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I didn't go to UC San Diego. I didn't get into UC San Diego. I'm not sure if I presented as the best candidate, because I was kind of just still in that blissed out state of like, hey, you know, it's like whatever happens, you know, they want cutthroat, like, give me the spot in your right. class. This is how I'm going to change medicine, and this is how I'm going to get you guys grant money. And
they're like, so send him over to the Eastern Medicine Community College.
Totally. Yeah. It's like, he probably belongs down in the Caribbean right now in medical school. But yeah, it's the transition back into real life. For anybody that's done those, is my hope, and I think everyone's hope, is that you can hold on to some aspect of that experience as you move into a fast paced lifestyle. And But eventually, without taking return trips into that space, it will totally bleed out of you. Like you will be, you won't have your stillness. You will lose all of your bliss. You will, and you'll just be back in the race of life. And so having like a steady meditation practice, but even a periodic 6 month, 1 year return to a really the other end of the spectrum, that quiet, that alone time, you know, the solo time, I think is really valuable. And I didn't get that for several years after that. And getting into medical school, I definitely arrived with more perspective, I think, on sort of just life, being a slightly older student than most of my classmates who had taken a little time away from college to explore, to travel, to do some spiritual work. I was able to have a little calmer demeanor and sort of not get just so right into the competitiveness of the graduate education. But by the end of our first anatomy block, which was 10 weeks long, all of that was just sucked right out of me. And it's just remarkable how that happens. Like you can't bank these things. It's like fitness. You can't bank fitness and then stop doing it for 3 months and expect to still have it. You know, you can't bank awareness so much without, you know, having an awareness practice or having a stillness practice or a meditation practice.
Right. So tell me, I was trying to look back and see if we had talked about this, but I didn't realize you ended up going to medical school. What was the experience like? And I don't see an MD behind your name, so I'm assuming something happened while you were in school.
Yeah, no, I got a 0.25 MD.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was in for 1 year and two, and like a month and a half into my second year. Mm-hmm. So year one of medical school in most instances is, you know, year one and two is basically an extension of college. You're kind of doing you're doing everything you did in college a little bit leveled up in about a quarter of the time in terms of like the education and the science education. They re-educate you on everything that was the basic sciences of medicine. And again, those were things I was really good at. I mean, I was good at them in college and I only got better with some age and some, you know, maturity. So I was successful in the fact that I was like performing well in medical school. But what was interesting to me was I went into healthcare was the goal, not like medicine, but like I want to be in healthcare. And I wanted to be around people that were excited about health. And unfortunately, medical school and my classmates and the people I found myself around were not, that's not the vibe I got. Was not like, yes, we're all here to like make the world healthier. It was like, we're here to learn, to get our degrees, to like figure out how to fix people when they're sick.
Right.
And that just didn't, that ultimately just didn't vibe with me. I mean, I could have done the work and I could have been, and I could have trudged along, but I was just losing that. I didn't have that collaborative passion that I was thinking I would gain from being around other students. And in fact, the medical school that I was at, and I'm sure this is the case all around, but you want to see like a pack of really unhealthy people, go watch first year medical students and second year medical students and really watch them all the way through residency. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, some of the most unhealthy behaviors out there. Heck, our medical school, our library, you want the closest food to the library where we all spent hours studying. Walk down to the basement. There was a Wendy's. That was our food that we had access to.
Wow.
It just blew my mind. And on top of that, I was kind of away from the California environment that I had grown up in and kind of the health culture. And I was in, you know, smack dab in Ohio, like middle of Ohio, Columbus, in Midwest, where, you know, the health movement hadn't really progressed very far there.
Right.
I could certainly navigate my own way, but I was surrounded by you know, most of my classmates were, hey, let's go get a Jimmy John's for lunch and, you know, drinking lots of beer on the weekend and raging pretty hard. And I was like, man, this is just not me. You know, right. This doesn't feel right.
Well, I mean, the medical industry is still very much the same, right? If there's no big overt problem or symptom going on, then the person is deemed perfectly healthy, right? People aren't looking at, it's rare to find a traditional doctor that's looking at blood work to try to do long-term preventative healthcare, like a functional medicine doctor or something like that. And it's certainly rare to find nutrition and fitness advice to help prevent a lot of these big problems from happening one day. I'm sure anybody listening to the show has heard enough of that in, you know, being a part of the functional fitness and CrossFit community. So it's not surprising to hear you say that, man. So did the lack of kind of connection to the end goal, was that the, what kind of did you in, was that kind of just demotivating for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was demotivating. And at the end of the day, I knew that there was going to be some type of medicine or healthcare that I wanted to practice that kind of it was going to look a lot like what I do today. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, shoot, I'm going to do all this. You know, you got 4 years to get licensed as a medical doctor. But then you essentially need another minimum three years of some form of internship and residency to be really useful in any, you know, practical way. I mean, students that graduate medical school with an MD and haven't done training like residency, like they don't know that much. They can't really do that much. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get the person right out of med school as your resident in the hospital because they probably don't know what they're doing. So I was like, okay, is that going to be, I got a 7-8 years so that I can get to a place where I could have a skill set that I could then go and use to create the mission or the type of healthcare delivery that I want. And at that point, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars will I be in debt? Which is kind of scary because it's like you're $300,000 in medical school debt. You got to take a competitive salaried physician role to pay that off in any reasonable amount of time. And that's not going to be like the competitive salaried position is not going to be the, you know, up and coming startup holistic health center with strength and conditioning and nutrition consultations next to me, the MD. I mean, right. That's going to take time to build. So I was like, oh, you know, I mean, if I could snap my fingers and have an MD behind my name right now and still be doing what I'm doing and not be, you know, and I would be stoked on that. I mean, I think that the medical training is extremely rigorous and it teaches people a ton about themselves and about disease and pathophysiology and how to work with people or how to not work with people. And it commands respect in with most of the people that are out there. Yeah, the functional fitness community who has heard that certain doctors, you know, don't know what they're talking. It's maybe they kind of lack trust there, mm-hmm. but that's the majority of people out there. The majority of people out there find out you're a doctor and you're like, oh, what? You know, I'll listen to anything you have to say.
Right, right.
And so that would, you know, that was really, that was the thing that held me moving along as far as I did, was like, I got to get these letters next to my name so that I can go change the game, essentially.
Right.
And yeah, so that kind of long-winded answer, but yeah, the drive and the motivation to become a medical doctor, there was just not really that light at the end of the tunnel that was crystal clear.
So then what? Yeah, you get out and do you immediately get into coaching CrossFit or what was your next move?
Yeah, I mean, I was also simultaneously being completely brainwashed by the the movement of CrossFit at the time. Oh, and I say that kind of loosely, you know, I mean, I was a very informed viewer of what was happening. I was consuming the information, but essentially I was very connected to what was happening in the CrossFit gym community. Although I wasn't training at one, because there wasn't one right in Columbus, it was like a 30-40 minute drive to Rogue Fitness where I was at school, and that was the closest gym. It was like Rogue Fitness was still owned by Katie and Bill Henniger. Mm-hmm. So it didn't work for me to go, but I was watching what was happening in those gyms, and to be honest, I was just completely blown away by the hordes of people that were showing up to be involved in a strength and conditioning based fitness program that talked about nutrition, that mentioned things about healthy living and lifestyle, and were sort of just kind of breaking ground in quality education around movement. Now, granted, things have gone a lot of different directions since then, but it was profound to see that. And I think you were probably around at the same time where you're like, man, people are banging on the door to go lift weights. That was never, you know, free weights, not like machines and sort of chat by the water cooler, but like work hard. And I couldn't, I was desperate to be involved in something like that. Now I didn't like, I did have dreams of like, okay, maybe I'll become a facility owner someday, or I'll be able to come back to my hometown. I'll start something that looks kind of like, you know, a CrossFit gym. Maybe it'll be slightly different. I don't know. But when I came home after medical school, it was kind of, I gave myself 12 months. I had 12 months to sort of make a decision as to whether I wanted to go back. Mm-hmm. So I had an opportunity to defer for a year. And when I was, so I said, okay, for that year, I'm going to really just dive head first into coaching or being a part of a community. And actually it started with that. It was like, I just need to go be a part of a community for these first couple months while I just get my, like, I get grounded again. Cause I was, it rocked me leaving. I mean, it was not an easy decision by any means. Mm-hmm. I was just a member of a CrossFit gym for a little bit. And then, you know, I think this is true for a lot of inspired coaches that are out there. They stand out from the rest of the gym, and you're like, oh, that person could probably be a good coach. And then they kind of get asked by the owner to be a coach or take over some responsibilities. And that was exactly how it worked for me. It was like, oh, this kid, man, he's kind of got his stuff together. Like he's a great athlete. He moves well and he knows a ton. Oh, weird. Okay. Maybe he's your coach. Oh, wow. He's a really good coach. Let's give him some more classes. Oh, nice. Wow. He's got more personal training clients than anybody else here. Oh, wow. He's like running one of our gyms for us. Oh, we should make him a partner. And that just is kind of how it evolved for me.
So cool, man. So in that period of time, you also went on to have a very successful career as an athlete. You were on a games team at least once, maybe two or three times. How many?
Three times. Yeah.
Okay. We competed against each other at least once, I know. As well as an individual. And then in 2016, you went through a period where, and I think I'm using your words, you talk about it as if everything started to fall apart for you physically. What happened in 2016?
Well, like you said, it was, the athletic career started sort of by accident. He was like, hey, you're good. Why don't you join our team? And then it was 8 years later. I was like, holy smokes. It's, you know, 2017, 2016, 7 years later, six games appearances three seasons of Grid League, which for those who remember that was a total beatdown of the physical and neurological systems. So essentially I just got done with that, and my body was pretty tapped. And you know what was interesting, and I'm having this realization now more than ever, is that 2016, I think, was a year that really shifted. CrossFit as a sport took a big leap in terms of the type of athlete that was going to be successful. And it really required just like a massive investment of time. Mm-hmm. And now the best athletes in the world that are actually going to make it to the CrossFit Games and have a chance to compete on the final days, they full time this thing. They don't mess around with anything else, really. Mm-hmm. Aside from maybe some online businesses that they try and, you know, have other people help them run. But I was at that tail end of it, and I really had aligned my life around being able to be fully invested to the last 6 months, where I had sold my business. I had left my CrossFit gym, and I was sort of a free agent. You know, I was out there just training for the games, coaching some online clients, and just totally head down focused. And I had this epic, you know, year, which finished with a ton of success for me. It was, you know, as high as I was going to climb in the sport ever. And then my body was just like, whoa, dude, you're 32 years old. And this is, you can't, like, that was a fun run, but you can't sustain this. There was physical injuries. Like, my shoulder was jacked. I was like, I'm going to have surgery. Like, what does that even look like? I don't even know what's wrong with me. And I was having some hip issues, but bigger picture, I was just tired, and my motivation was low. Mm-hmm. And I was in that process of like, it's a cyclical, year of CrossFit. It's games come down, ramp back up, open regionals, games, just do it over and over again. And I just, my body was not following any of the normal rhythms. I wasn't feeling myself bounce back. I was feeling myself get worse and worse. And I just intuitively knew there was something off. And my coach at the time was very aware of just the total toll that this whole sport takes on athletes. I was fortunate to have been supported by an OPEX coach who really understood beyond just like the sets and reps, like how hard this can be, but, you know, the systems, the hormones, you know, the endocrine system, the neurological systems that just get beat over, you know, over and over and over again. And so that just was my kind of awakening, that I was like, I need to approach this differently if I want to get back to feeling the way I used to feel, which was energetic, alive, empowered by my training, and feeling a healthy relationship to the gym. Mm-hmm. And I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that are going to be like, whoa, that's me. I get you. I feel that too.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. What a crazy set of events, man. What was the next step that eventually took you to creating functional bodybuilding? Cause I know it was in this period of transition.
Yeah, it was essentially, and back to, you know, when we were just talking at the beginning, I was talking about like this, what's this message, this core audience, it's basically this kind of, we have a whole generation of hard charger fitness people that grew out of the CrossFit movement. They love, I mean, we love to get after it in some way, in the gym, out of the gym, taking that mentality and applying it to other things. But certainly for the folks in the gym that love to do mixed modal functional fitness, there's this burnout factor that happens. And I got back to simplicity in my own training. That was the guidance from my coach, was to say, we gotta dial it way the hell back. You're an advanced athlete, you're a high level athlete, and we're gonna scale you down to the simplest stuff so that you can heal yourself without having to give up the ability to be in the gym and move. Mm-hmm. So we essentially just scaled things way back, and scaling things back looked like doing a little bit more bodybuilding, doing a bit more isolation, doing less fast-paced, dynamic stuff, and allowing the systems to heal, the endocrine system to balance. You know, my adrenals were tapped out, but they were going to rebuild if I lowered my stress. My shoulder was jacked. Like I was telling you, I was like, I mean, I would go to bed at night in pain, and I would like, you know, pretty much cry to my wife about like, I think I'm going to have to, like, I'm terrified of the idea of having surgery. It's like I had surgery when I was younger, and it really messed up my psychology around the whole injury, stress cycle, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know, terrified that like my shoulders, but we went back to basic foundational movement plane, scapular stability work. And over time it's like, okay, my shoulder, no, it heals. It can heal. Like it's functional. I can live and do more stuff. And so in the practice of doing that myself, I realized, I was like, holy smokes, this is what like universally scalable means. This whole concept of you can take training and you can make it, you can really span this wide spectrum of elite fitness down to, you know, getting someone off the couch. Mm-hmm. I had to experience it again. I mean, yeah, these were things I had done 10 years ago when I was doing bodybuilding, or I was just learning strength conditioning, but it'd been a long time and we lose sight of that. I lost sight of it. And it was great to put it together again and create sort of like a hybrid training method of super simple foundational stuff that made me feel amazing, but then periodically dipping my toe in that, you know, kind of intensity bucket that people love and I still enjoy. I still like to get after it. But I don't want to get after it so much so that I'm going to feel like my shoulder's about to pop out, that I'm going to be tired, that I'm going to lose my sex drive, that I'm going to just be depressed. Like that's none of it's worth. There's no intensity that is worth that. And there's definitely no gains that can come out of intensity that make feeling like crap most of the time worth it. And I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that they actually feel pretty shitty in their training. They're like, man, I actually, you're right, I kind of feel aches and pains all the time. And it's, I mean, I don't want to make it oversimplify things, but it's like, dude, you're doing too much and let's just do less. And by doing less, you don't have to, it doesn't have to look boring. We can make it fun. We can make it functional bodybuilding and we can make it sexy as hell and awesome and a good time and get you a great pump and make you feel like you're the shit again.
So an admittedly loaded question for you. Do you think that functional bodybuilding is healthier for an individual than CrossFit?
Yes. I mean, that was my short, quick answer. I think CrossFit, well, you know, CrossFit's doing a big kind of rebrand and shift in their focus. I think from the little I can really assess from what I see that's coming out, it's like, yeah, we want to be focused on health and let's downplay the intensity. Let's downplay the dynamic kipping movements and let's downplay all that. And let's focus on the foundational movement patterns of CrossFit and let's try and show people how we can scale it with a couch or with a, you know, water jugs or whatever they're showing on .com these days. And essentially I'm like, well, guess what? That's what I've been doing for 2 years, but I've been using dumbbells and kettlebells and barbells and boxes and unilateral exercises and bodybuilding. And it's like, it's, in order for something to be healthy for an individual, it has to truly be able to span a very wide spectrum of intensity and, modalities. Mm-hmm. And the way CrossFit went for the last 7 years, as a result, I believe, of the big push around the CrossFit Games to raise awareness, was it went to a very small sector of like high intensity, tons of diverse, I mean, tons of dynamic movements. And that is not, that's not healthy for anyone. I mean, elite athletes within CrossFit are not healthy. I think we all are starting to know that now.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it's not the way, it's not the path to, you know, kicking ass in your 70s. It's going to be a 5 to, you know, hopefully an 8 year stint. If you're going 10 years, you're really genetically gifted, but probably going to pay the price of that later on with some pretty jacked up knees and shoulders and, you know, backs.
Right. Yeah. I don't think anybody would argue otherwise. I think the more important piece is it sustainable for the general population in the average CrossFit gym? And it sounds like, or it really appears like in many gyms, the answer is no, right? Because they're training people as if they are CrossFit Games athletes, and they're training them with a very high level of like a lot of technical movements, very high load, very high volume in general. And it's just really beating people up. And I think people have just kind of learned or adapted and just accepted that, oh, okay, I do CrossFit, I'm always going to be a little bit banged up and hurt. Which if you're in this for longevity and improved sense of well-being, then you don't have to accept that you're always going to be in pain.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're right in that with a lack of leadership and clear direction, the gym owners of the world were doing what they kind of came up learning how to do, which was look to the media, the HQ media, for advice on how to coach people. And when they saw Games stuff posted all the time and, you know, that kind of training, then that's what filtered into the box. And everyone just hid behind the idea of, well, it's all universally scalable. But I'm like, dude, you're not scaling for 20 people. You got one, you know, part-time coach that's just punching the clock and he's watching 20 people just do snatches. It's not happening. So that, yeah, that's, so now it's like in the absence of, well, now it's a really kind of, things are changing. And I think people started to recognize that the programming that they were maybe getting, that the programming is actually pretty important. Obviously, you need great coaches and great communicators. That's how you get a program delivered effectively. But the program design is also a pretty essential part of this. And they started to look to other people online that had better, maybe they had more credibility and they trusted them more to design better programs. Unfortunately, a lot of people just made things worse by just, I mean, there's still a lot of people that are putting out competitor programs that are getting followed. Like, it kills me to hear that, you know, Gym X is using the competitor program D and then they're scaling it for people. I'm like, what? Why? You know, and these are not competitors and they don't need a watered down version of competition. They need functional bodybuilding. I mean, I'm not trying to pump my own stuff. I'm just trying to say, like, they need that kind of training. They need to come in. They need to do, you know, sets and rep ranges that get them a little bit more time under tension. They don't need to be hitting maximal contractions, strength, you know, peak strength. They certainly don't need to be doing anything overhead because they don't have full shoulder flexion to begin with. So let's just keep their arms below their shoulders for a little bit until they develop better mobility. It's been weird. And I have kind of watched it from the sidelines for a little while now and known that I'm like, man, I want to keep speaking this message of there's a different way to approach training for people that doesn't have to make them feel like they're not getting a good workout in, that they're not pushing themselves. I mean, I'm still grateful to CrossFit for so many things. One thing in particular is that it has helped people and helped coaches and helped me and recognize that we're capable of a lot more than maybe we gave ourselves credit for. the potential of the human body to adapt, to overcome adversity, to endure, you know, discomfort, and then have that emotional and psychological growth from the discomfort translate into life. Like, all that stuff is amazing. And so let's take that, those lessons, and then let's also apply the other lessons that we've learned about doing too much for people that don't have their lifestyle and their nourishment in check to handle all that craziness that's out there.
Right. So now we've got the regionals completely off the table and zero CrossFit Games media. So it seems like there's a large portion of people that are now just completely demotivated to have anything to do with the CrossFit Games because their shot at the next level was taken away. And regardless of how you feel about that, I know that CrossFit is doing that because they think it's in the best interest of the company long term, and that's for them to decide. One thing I think is interesting is that of all of the possible negative things that the CrossFit Games and CrossFit Regionals has done to the industry, one of the I think many positive things it's done is provide a high level of external motivation for a certain percentage of the people. And now that they don't have something that they're striving for, what I found is that a lot of them are kind of stuck feeling like, okay, I don't know what to do now. What are you seeing in the people that follow you that are deciding just to focus on looking good and moving well as an end in and of itself from a motivation standpoint?
I agree. There's definitely that it's how you framed it, that the regionals and the whole CrossFit season as it was formerly laid out, it provided individuals with this kind of extrinsic motivation, this thing that just guided them, you know, through their fitness journey. It was powerful, and I see some downside in that. How many people do you know that they're just caught in the wheel of, you know, open regionals? You know, I was in that wheel. It's hard to have any perspective when you're in it and you're just going from season to season, because it's relentless. It's just ongoing. So I think the shakeup, I think, is really tragic for a lot of individuals, not because it leaves them direction. I mean, not the directionlessness, but it's like there's so many coaches and so many athletes that have dedicated so much to this, and they don't have like a system that they can really trust. You know, I mean, there are great people out there that coach competitive CrossFit athletes for a living. And it's like, well, wait a minute, what am I coaching? What's the sport I'm actually coaching? I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. It's like, there's no consistency there. So it's really a bummer. But to your question, how has that shown up in our world? The look good, move well. It's amazing. You know, I kind of was wondering, like, how is this going to change our business and the growth of it? There are still plenty of people that want to be engaged in some form of competitive fitness that are training, that want to train year round, and they want to generally feel good most of the year, and they want to have the ability and the skills, and they want to just be, it's like, I want to be able to go play pickup basketball. And in the same way, they're like, I want to be able to go and play pickup CrossFit. You know, maybe it's the open every year. They don't care about qualifying because there's this de-emphasis on trying to move to the next level, or they want to go and do their local throwdown. And maybe they want to kind of ramp things up for a couple months and do that. But I see it firsthand with some of our on-site clients here that they still like the idea of competitive fitness on a smaller scale. They're not trying to make it to the CrossFit Games. And they'll spend 8 months out of the year just doing look good, move well programs that make them feel good. They can still get stronger. They can still develop skills. They're not peaked for like a lactic, you know, push at any given time because they're just not doing that type of intensity. But they're like, I want to do this local competition, this local throwdown. And it's 2 months away. Can we kind of build for it? And so we build for it. And that's the beauty of this style of training is that you can take look good, move well, and make a couple strategic tweaks to the training program. And suddenly you're building up to a competitive fitness setting. And then, okay, it's done. Boom. Let's get you right back to some regeneration training. Let's get you back to some more bodybuilding. Let's get you back to some more range of motion work. Let's help you heal and then do the stuff that you love to do again under control and in an environment that's going to make you really be able to get after the rest of your life without feeling beat down constantly by the training that you're doing.
Yeah, it's really amazing what you're doing, man. I think you are you're catering to the needs of such a large percentage of this population and offering them something that fulfills all of their fitness needs, but also allows them to go out and explore different forms of sport and adventure and movement in general. Before the show, I was telling you a little bit about my, like what I'm doing currently, which is jiu-jitsu. And when I was training really, really hard, there would have been like, there's no way I could have trained jiu-jitsu at a high level. It's just too much on the joints. It would have zapped my energy and I wouldn't have been able to do it. So by training very similar to the way that you're describing, I have more energy. I have, my body feels way better. My flexibility and mobility has gotten tremendously better because I'm not doing as many high rep for time workouts. And so I've actually been able to make some progress. I'm able to really lean into this new discipline that I see a very, like the potential for a very long career and experience with something that I think is very sustainable and really lines up with my values long term.
That's it right there. It's like, and you know, that the training requirement that you might need outside of jiu-jitsu to feel, look, perform the way you want, it might be as little as one time a week or two times a week. It's like, you know, you're truly trying to then take the use training to augment the rest of your life rather than be the sole focus of it. And that's not to say that people shouldn't make training their sole focus. If they're really passionate about, you know, training in the gym, then we want to be able to support that. And it's ensuring that you can feel like you're constantly developing and you're not just burning yourself out at the same time. We have a couple clients on site here that, and actually we got a remote client, a pretty high level jiu-jitsu guy from Southern California. But we love training them. And I mean, they're some of the most fun clients that we have. Cause they're super clear. Like, this is my passion. This is what I want. I'm training for that. So make sure that's the focus, you know, and you're right. It's not about, you know, you get plenty of the conditioning and plenty of the power work and all the skill training, obviously within jiu-jitsu, but what are some things that can be done in the gym to support that? And,
Awesome, dude. Well, I'm on a roll. I'm not sure if you guys listening are into this role or not, but, I keep running out of time with my guests. I had a whole nother long list of questions that I wanted to dive into you with in terms of more like technical nutrition and longevity questions. But we're doing more storytelling on the show, and from my perspective, it's much more enjoyable and people really get to know my guests a lot more. So I guess let me know if you're not enjoying this, audience. But with that said, we're kind of out of time, man. This was phenomenal. It was great to get to know even more of your story and how this whole movement that you've created got started.
Well, thanks for giving me a chance to kind of talk about it all the way from some of those early days before I even got into medicine or medical school. It's always fun to walk that line again.
Certainly, man. With that said, we'll do a quick follow-up, hopefully, and then we'll go straight into some more science-y type stuff, which I think will be fun.
Terrific. Yeah.
So where can people find out more about your company and keep up with you personally?
Definitely head over to revival-strength.com and jump onto our email list. That is, I encourage people to do that just because I basically send out editorial content every week that is training related, things that are on my mind, thoughts that are coming up with functional bodybuilding, and lots of just free content for people to explore what this stuff is like. And then, you know, in coming up in April, we're going to be launching Awaken Training Series again. And it's just a great time of year, certainly for the CrossFitters that are out there that are listening, that are wrapping up the open. There's no better time to engage in sort of a rebuilding phase for yourself. And that's truly what, you know, Awaken Training Series can serve that purpose for many individuals, is to just slow down and rebuild your foundation, even if you choose to go back to competitive fitness later. But it'd be great for people to connect with us through the website and get involved in the training series.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for your time, Marcus.
Oh, my pleasure, Mike. Thank you again for having me.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.